It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on a brand new week. I guess this qualifies as the second full week of July. This is the 13th day of July, 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us live on the interweb tubes. It is, in fact, Moran Monday. And if you'd like to enhance your live listening experience, then by all means, bounce on over to HeadOn.live, click on chat room. If you've never picked out a screen name and a password before, please feel free to do so. You will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jimmy and Roger and Squeaky, and capably moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgistan, as well as longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, while a third stage guild navigator, well, space folding has been, I think, temporarily suspended during this part of the summer, while the man cave is, in fact, a man cave furnace. Yeah. Hi, I'm Bob, and happy birthday goes out to our buddy Darlene in Connecticut. You know, after our conversation on Friday over various and sundry forms of grills, man, there's some cool, there's more cool stuff out there to play with. And so I hope Darlene's able to find something she can work with and have a wonderful time making outdoor pizza and grilling burgers and dogs and stuff like that, and having a fantastic grilling experience. Now all she needs is a store that carries Kaneka. We'll have to check the Kaneka website and see if there are any purveyors in Connecticut. I don't know, but anyway, happy birthday to Darlene. Her birthday challenge is still on the table for this evening, and many thanks for that. Between that and Laborman's other challenge, they both sort of went by the boards this weekend. So there is 100 and let's see. There's 110 bucks in challenges, and that would wipe out today's fundraising goal. And you could do it and celebrate Darlene's birthday with her. And so with that, well, if you want to run over to HeadOn.live and use the PayPal interface, that's awesome. And, of course, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, because we don't sell anything here. This is not a profit-oriented operation by any stretch of the imagination. No. This is your kind gifts are what keeps this on the air. And thanks going out today to our two subscribers for the 13th day of the month. Thanks to Gary and Gaia in Oregon. And thank you to Greg. Thank you very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. It is it's the only reason this program is able to exist, plain and simple. So thank you both, and hopefully more folks will jump in and we'll knock out Monday's fundraising and not be start the week by digging a hole. So there's that. Let's see here. Getting started early, Kyle in Kentucky Stan says, so the only time the blind squirrels little Marco and Raffaelito actually find the acorn and rightly call out China for its human rights abuses, they got sanctioned by China. I mean, of all the things they could get sanctioned for, like Raphael not wearing a mask on a flight despite it being mandatory. We'll get to that. Also, rest in power, Sandra Bland and the other suicides of black people hanging from fucking trees that have just been randomly occurring lately. Just coincidence, I'm sure. We will win and justice will prevail in the long run, and I hope when we do prevail that all the families of those I mentioned will know that their deaths, while painful and awful, and my heart goes out to everyone who's dealing with the hurts of losing someone, especially in this way, on this anniversary of the death of Sandra Bland, that they will know that their deaths help spark a revolution for change, and it's horrible and horrific. That's where my mind went, because we still don't have equality under the damn law. Okay, I'll stop ranting and leave it to people more qualified than me to comment on this now. Yeah. Serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, Ralph's got right on it, and Darlene, if you're there, Kaneka sausage can be had. Oh, darn, I bet you can't get on there. Well, that makes sense. The NSB Groton in Groton, Connecticut, carries Kaneka. It's interesting. Kaneka is in most PXs, BXs, whatever, because, well, there's so many folks who know Kaneka in the military and want it, so they make sure that they keep it in the... Right. I wonder if it's a lot less expensive there. I don't know. But anyway, that's where it is in Connecticut, if you've got a connection to the NSB Groton. I love how the Horn Family Community Congregation works together to problem solve. Thank you. Thank you for doing that, Ralphs. And thank you very kindly to Jeremy for getting us started. That leaves $105 in challenges, and in Darlene's birthday challenge and the remainder of Laborman's challenge. So thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Hopefully you'll have more company here in fairly short order. Once again, it is Naked Radio in the Horn, the fabulous Horn Studio Sauna. We're up in the 80s in here, and, it's a little sticky, even with the air conditioner running hell-bent for leather. Darlene says, thanks, Bob, having a great day. No grilling yet, but a family member dropped off a whole belly clam dinner, my second favorite dish after soft-shell crabs that I'm thoroughly enjoying, and listening to the program is the icing on the cake. Come on, Horn listeners, let's beat the challenges on the table, says Darlene. I've had whole belly clams once, and that was with that was in the company of gone but not forgotten Bob Lottie up in Massachusetts on my one lone trip. Well, no, it was my second trip. But my one lone trip to the Boston area, we went to a place called Kelly's and had fried whole belly clams, and they were magnificent. Yeah. In fact, I was talking to my grocer up at the Wiggling Pig, and I've had this notion because I want to do it over a wood fire. I want to make paella. Mm-hmm. And so he's checking into whether or not he can source some whole clams in the shell and some oysters. Not a big paella calls for mussels, and dadgummit, I just don't. It's the one seafood I'm not much of a fan of. Not a big mussels fan. But I'd love to make a big batch of paella. I think that would be delicious. And the other thing I'm thinking about is roasted, we were talking about this on Friday, roasted oysters on the Acorn Grill. Yeah. Don in West Tennistan says that Kaneka may be findable at Aldi's. Darlene, if you've got an Aldi's up there, you could at least ask. Let's see. Ipswich, Massachusetts, Randy tells us, is the place in Massachusetts for fried clams. I know this because my dear friend, Bo, who is departing Ipswich, has spoken lovingly quite often of the, well, generally speaking, how fantastic the seafood is there. But he's bugging out of Ipswich and heading back to the Midwest. Ipswich clams. Yes. Big old suckers. Good to, ooh, wouldn't they be good in some paella? Sorry, food porn. Gotta stop. We got more ends to get to. Let's see, we've got a lengthy note from Joey. Bob! I was watching the Big Ten Network this weekend, and the network featured the 80s Iowa Hawkeye football team, which was very successful thanks to the emergence of a great leader and head coach Hayden Fry. Fry realized early on that he would have to reach out into the surrounding states to find players of a caliber that could compete at the Big Ten level against the likes of Michigan and Ohio State. So, as the legend goes, immediately Coach Fry contacted well-known advisor and football aficionado Billable Rick for some advice, and Rick was right on the job as he advised Coach Fry to head to Chicago and raid the Windy City. While Rick was in Chicago attending Northwestern, he scouted the one and only quarterback, Chuck Long, and helped Coach Fry lure Long away from Northwestern. I got a feeling this might be fictional. Long would be there for 5 years, and he and Fry would turn the Hawkeyes program around into a formidable foe in the Big Ten. Yes, Iowa had a Long and a Fry, which equates to long fry or potato, which leads us right to the farmers of whom in Iowa foster and raise a plethora of potatoes and copious amounts of corn. I thought Idaho was potatoes. Idaho, Michigan, and Maine. Well, maybe Iowa too. Who knows? Unlike the successful Hawkeyes football team in the decades of the 80s, farmers had their worst decade in years, as many farms were shuttered and bankrupted because of high interest rates and inflation. Coach Fry, in what many believe was his, made his best move of his coaching career when he decided the sticker ANF would be applied to the Hawkeye helmets in recognition of the farming crisis. ANF stood for America Needs Farmers. Fry, in so doing, put a spotlight on the plight of the American farmer. Many of you may remember Willie Nelson and the Farm Aid concerts, which helped raise money and awareness for the crisis. I think John Mellencamp was also involved in that, wasn't he? Then another Iowa N had a great idea. Yes, then came the great Ronald Reagan with all of his bullshit blather about how government was the problem and not the solution, and I'm going to make sure your tax dollars are not wasted on pork bill spending. Pretty sure old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, was born in Illinois. We're having, Joey, we're having states that begin in I problems this evening. Keep in mind, the previous five-year time period, only $3 billion allocated for the same program. This caused farmers to overproduce and effectively drive the cost of pork and corn down to the point that they could not turn a profit. Simple laws of supply and demand. The real answer was obvious, according to Coach Fry and many other experts. Reagan simply should have paid the farmers not to produce so much pork. This would have cut down on the consumption of meat and pork, kept the farmers in business, and gone a long way to save the environment. Instead, farmers overproduced and could not sustain, causing many of them to have to sell off to hedge fund vulture capitalists, better known as Big Ag, the likes of ConAgra and Smithfield, etc. Meanwhile, the environment's been seriously damaged because of the runoff from the fields producing algae blooms in the Great Lakes and Gulf of Mexico, and has sent many small-town economies in the Midwest into ruins. Well, if we're going to talk about Smithfield and hog farming and so forth, there's also the vast, fetid, dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone ruining lagoons of pig feces and pig urine and pig vomit and aborted pig fetuses and And we think, in fact, the flu outbreak of around 2009 may have originated in those. Unfortunately, the hedge fund vultures are still continuing to steal farms through the commodities and futures market in the Midwest today as we speak. These hedge funders stole PPE and will probably hack into futures involving the vaccine for the virus. If we ever get one, he added. Hayden Fry died just late last year at the age of 90. He probably wasn't a Democrat, but he had some great solutions for many of his country's ills. Fry's great-great-grandfather fought alongside Sam Houston to win independence of the Lone Star State. This has been Joey's Journal for Monday, the 13th day of July, with Giraffe looking long for some good political fries. Bob, please have Joey stop telling us that potatoes are grown in Iowa. Potatoes are grown in Idaho. It's the corn that's king in Iowa, man. And Billable Rick would know, because Billable Rick is, of course, an Iowegian. And I learned that word from Sister Carol Baker. Yes, okay, I'm being confirmed by James in Illinois. Ronnie Rayguns, the scourge of Eureka, Illinois, as I recall. That sounds right. Bob, stop telling us how many more ends you have to get to. Billable Rick is on a tear. Bob, stop telling us Billable Rick's on a tear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, me. Let's see. Where to begin? Let's start with Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. Yesterday, the 12th of July, he took a flight aboard American Airlines. I'm guessing maybe it went out, it was DFW to either National or Dulles. Dixon, Illinois. Thank you, Billable Rick. And Stephen New York says, you can relax, I'm finally here. By the way, Reagan went to Eureka, a.k.a. Urethra College. Yeah, born in Dixon, Illinois, went to college in Urethra. There we go. Okay, so we've got that all squared away. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. Yeah, him. Somebody took a picture of Rafaelito on the American Airlines flight. And, of course, he was sitting there in his dress trousers and white dress shirt with his reading glasses propped on the fold of his gut. And he wasn't wearing a mask. And he wasn't holding a drink or anything. He's just simply above, you know, us little people. He was in an enclosed space with vigorously recirculated air, huffing and puffing and chuffing along, possibly asymptomatically infected. Who knows? That's why we do the masking thing, because no one does know. And not a soul, not a single flight attendant said a goddamn word to him. No air marshal was contacted, nothing. Because if you're, you know, if you want to get a pandemic, help spread a pandemic around an airliner at 30,000 feet, well, that's your ride under the Constitution. It's in the Constitution! Right there next to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And then today, he posted, or another guy posted video of he and Raphaelito playing old school pro wrestling Nintendo, sitting within about a foot of each other on a couch, huffing and chuffing and LARPing and smolicking and gravelating all over each other. It was bad. Awful. And, of course, no one to say a damn word to him. Let's be clear on this Moran Monday. Beyond being a Moran, Raphaelito Eduardo Cruz, the booger-eating future king of America, is a bioterrorist. Billable Rick says, Raphaelito Cruz, mask hole. Let's give Raphaelito Cruz a break. The picture that I saw him shows him with a cup of Starbucks. You ever tried to drink or eat through a mask? In any case, Raphaelito is an ass, whether he's wearing a mask or not. That's true. And you know what you do? You take the mask off. You take a sip of coffee. You put the mask back on. But, you know, those are rules for other people, not Republicans. Because if you're a Republican, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. And, of course, American Airlines, in the Twitter thread that had the photo in it, they said, oh, we're working diligently to make sure that blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And they didn't do diddly dick. He said in the photo, he's certainly not drinking the coffee. He's instead futzing around on his phone. And here's the thing. You do not have to remove your mask to use your phone. So, deadly, toxic moron who's actively trying to kill people. But you could use that same descriptor for virtually any Republican in the United States, especially any Republican member of government. Now, this weekend saw a dedicated effort on the part of the Maggot House there at 1600 Black Lives Matter Plaza to try to discredit Dr. Fauci. Now, Dr. Fauci has a past. His response in the early days of the rise of HIV/AIDS was slow and deadly. But it appears that he learned from that mistake. He had to be dragged kicking and screaming into being proactive about HIV/AIDS. But he is, well, he has seemed to be more interested in making sure that he didn't make the same mistake twice. For instance, Maggot Moran, Kaylee Maganini, declared that, well, Dr. Fauci represents only one viewpoint whose advice gets to the president and indirectly. Yeah. Sure, Kaylee. Yeah, sure, MAGA Barbie.
And in the Southwest, you see the virus really spreading. And testing seems to be an issue in certain areas. The one other thing that came out over the last few days is within the administration, there seems to be a pushback on Anthony Fauci, from Admiral Girard to Peter Navarro, saying, I like Fauci, but he's been wrong a lot. And Peter Navarro said the same thing. Word is he hasn't met with the president since first week in June. What's the reality between their relationship?
So let me first point out, you know, Admiral Joie, I think, hit the nail on the head on this yesterday. He was making the point that Dr. Fauci represents one viewpoint in the administration, and he looks at things from a public health standpoint, whereas you have other folks like Dr. McCann Katz, who looks at, you know, the consequences of staying closed, psychologically, what that does to society with drug overdoses and suicides that we've seen increase. So the point of the task force is to be a whole of government look at what is best for this country. That includes Dr. Fauci's opinion. It includes Admiral Joie's. And ultimately, those conclusions are taken to the president. So Dr. Fauci's one member of a team, but rest assured his viewpoint is represented and the information gets to the president through the task force.
Yeah. That's because one of the other things that we learned over the course of the weekend is that Dr. Fauci has not briefed Nitwit Nero in more than 2 months. More than 2 months. Oh, dear, dear Bob, says Steve in New York. It's not I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Republicans know that the Rona is a hoax, duh. Duh. Yeah, it's so hoaxy that the county commissioner in Florida, duh, who voted against a mask mandate in his county, is now in critical condition from the Rona. The hoax Rona. And nobody knows if he'll make it. Duh. Mm-hmm. And there she is. The pride of Harvard. Kaylee McEnany. One viewpoint. Yeah, because after all, you know, that viewpoint is only the single most informed viewpoint on infectious disease and epidemiology in the entire new 90 states of America. But there's some dude who worries about psychological impacts. Oh, kill. Gee, it makes you wonder if maybe they've got a Scientologist on the coronavirus task force too. Maybe they could explain how it's all those damn thetans that's got out of whack that's causing the Rona. I mean, why not? I go back to what I've been saying. We've got to survive this toxic bastard all the way to January 20th. And in the meantime, they trotted out Betsy, who takes pictures, selfies of herself, or Betsy who has screenshots of herself in front of a bookcase with no fucking books in it. DeVos. Yeah, she got trotted out to come and tell us that it is our duty to risk the lives of our children and grandchildren for the sake of Donald Trump's political ambitions. They are monsters. And of course, she's a Christian, so that doubles down on the monstrosity. Loves that Bible. Just never really spent any time reading it. Sort of like Ty in Caddyshack. I notice you don't spend a lot of time in the lumber yard. Don't really know where it is. She doesn't know where her Bible is either. But she's perfectly willing to kill children. After all, she was as silent as a graven image when, and they still are being, little brown babies kidnapped and put in cages in concentration camps. Where, by the way, the Rona is raging. Yeah, lest we forget, right? And Steve in New York says, subject line, Kaylee. First of all, I owe a preemptive apology to all the horn community women. Every time I hear Kaylee's voice and the criminal enabling that drips from her lips, I want to slap her with a velvet glove replete with it full of hardened concrete. I just want to see her, you know, when this is all over and we start the cleanup. I just want to see her get her head shaved and march through, march down Pennsylvania Avenue. Yeah. But in regard to, and because we had the clip a while back of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, talking about how children can't get and can't pass the Rona, and that the death rate is like 0.0016 or whatever. Now, we all know how sketchy I am when it comes to ciphering on the fly. But I do know the difference between fractions and decimals and the numerical concept of zero. And any number that is not zero means children die. So I think we really need to internalize and start talking about, if you want to, I'm not that I'm telling you to, because I don't want the emails. But I saw over the weekend a Daily Coast post from someone who lives in Fairfax County, Virginia, and was talking about the 185,000 students who go to school in that Virginia county alone. And this person, and I want to say 0.016 was the number the person was using. I may be wrong. But the point here, the point that the writer made, was that if you take that 185,000 students and multiply it by 0.016, you get a number. And as bedeviled as I was by algebra, I understood the concept of positive and negative numbers. And the number that you get when you multiply 185,000 by 0.016 or whatever it was like 240 dead kids. And so that's what Betsy DeVos is talking about when she says we've got to open the schools. That's what Donald Trump is talking about when he says we've got to open the schools. That you know, some positive number certain of children who, if they were fetuses, the Republicans would really care about, have to die. They're already born, and they have to die for the political goals and ambitions and sickness of a pathological bioterrorist like Donald J. Trump. The J stands for plague. And I dare say I speak for the entire Horn Family Community Congregation when I say that's unacceptable. Because what they're talking about in, say, a school system with 185,000 students is a roulette wheel with 185,000 slots. And when you spin the wheel and you spin the little white ball, it is going to end up in a slot. And in the case of this metaphor, that slot represents a family sunk in the most hateful depths of agony and despair as they watch their child die. That's how malignant these morons in the Trump maladministration are. That is the cold, brutal calculus in which they are willing to engage in order to try to ensure his re-election. And since we're working with that 240 number, which I think I remember it that way, I don't know. That means that in a place like Fairfax County, Virginia, after that first spin, they'll spin it 239 more times. And 239 more families will be shattered. I wonder if that asshole that Kayleigh McEnany was talking about, who calculates the psychological damage of being closed down. I wonder if that jackanapes has calculated the damage that a family endures when a first grader dies of an illness the first grader didn't have to get. I mean, it's not like there's no data. That self-same asshole who studies the psychological attacks has an entire community to study. Newtown, Connecticut, and the families of the children at Sandy Hook. Because they could probably tell him a thing or two about what happens when a six-year-old is snatched from life. Now, not being a Christian, I'm not burdened with this bullshit notion of forgiveness. So I don't have to sit here and pretend that these vicious, malignant thugs are worthy of forgiveness. I can just say what they're talking about is unforgivable. One county. One Northern Virginia county. Interestingly, the county that houses the headquarters of, wait for it, the National Ruble Association. But that's one county. And these homicidal Christian maniacs want to set up a roulette wheel in every county of every state in the nation. And they want parents to come up and spin it. There's always been a lottery. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon. Who knew that a brilliant and terrifying short story to which I was first exposed maybe in ninth grade would be in operation, would be the metaphor for our country in 2020. Steve in New York says, it's called murdering children on the altar of capitalism in reverence to their god, Mammon. You left out the blood-soaked part, the blood-soaked altar. And every one of those families that, in because there's nothing but cruel irony in all of this, every one of those families is going to be on the hook for burying their beloved child. And that's just the children. Because there are teachers and support personnel. And they're going to die too. This isn't fear-mongering. This is just math. Our buddy Steve in New York has talked about how he's a data nerd and a numbers nerd. Well, I'll bet you Steve can probably get this down to some really, really brutal realities. How many children are in the public school system of New York City? How many school children in the public schools of Los Angeles, California? How many teachers? How many bus drivers? How many cafeteria workers? How many maintenance personnel? And how many will die? You know, from time to time I hear from people about the idea of a general strike. Well, this may be one instance. It's not a strike as such. It's more like a boycott. And it may be the boycott that saves children's lives. For instance, to go back to that Fairfax County analogy, the superintendent of schools there has said that if his schools were to practice the social distancing necessary to make reopening the schools even remotely safer, he would need something on the order of the square footage of the Pentagon. Ponder that.
Bob, stop telling us what to ponder.
Roger in Oregon informing me. Breaking, California's two largest school districts, Los Angeles and San Diego, have announced all classes will begin online only in the fall in order to protect students and staff against COVID-19. This will, of course, occasion a titanic wrong day, hissy fit, purple and polka dotted on the part of Corona Caligula. And the problem is the states where maggots are in charge, whether it's Florida with white supremacist adjacent illegitimate Governor Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, or Texas with Greg Abbott, or Alabama with Governor Meemaw, or Mississippi with Governor Colonel Taint Reeves, where one in six members of the Mississippi legislature itself have the Rona. They will try to move heaven and earth to make certain that they force the families in their states to spin that contagious roulette wheel of death. This is one of those moments when the goddess of irony's work lacks absolutely any humor whatsoever. We haven't had a school shooting in a long time. And now, instead, since we haven't had any children getting murdered by young white men with weapons of war, well, we're going to make sure that students continue to die via bioterrorism. If somewhere out in the wider world there was somebody who absolutely hated Merca, and they were saying out loud and on YouTube and whatnot, they were saying that biological agents should be released inside America's schools to kill the children, we would drone that motherfucker faster than you can say hellfire missile. There wouldn't even be a greasy spot left where that homicidal maniac had stood. And yet the President of the United States of America is saying, and his minions, Betsy DeVos and Mike Pencilneck Geek and maggot governors like Abbott and Kemp and DeKlantis, are all saying the same thing. They want to release a contagious biologic agent inside our schools to kill some percentage of our children and grandchildren, our beloveds, our neighbors, our future. And there are no consequences whatsoever. The commutation of the sentence of Roger Stone that we learned of on Friday evening on the front porch should, in a just world, occasion an immediate vote on a bill of impeachment, because the president cannot use his pardon and commutation powers in furtherance of his own criminal conduct or in defense of his own criminal conduct. But we're in the middle of a pandemic, and we can't even engage the constitutional processes that we desperately need because of the pandemic. And the Senate wouldn't vote to remove him anyway, because the Senate is comprised of people like Josh Hawley and Rafaelito Cruz and John Cornholio and Mitch McConnell. My thinking was that we probably, after the first impeachment, should have impeached him again. And again and again and again. Make it clear, at least to history, that this was the most criminal, crooked, corrupt president in the history of the Republic. But we can't seem to do that. And now the Democrats are probably scared, and possibly justifiably so, that if they were to impeach him again, that it might blow up in their faces and they might lose their majority. and so we. We ride it out. People I know who have been through hurricanes tell me that the hardest part of it, well, it's frightening. But if you take appropriate precautions, you've got a half a chance. If you can take those precautions, many people can't. Because Merca. We saw that as people fled to the Superdome in New Orleans during Katrina. But if you can take precautions, then it's still terrifying. And the thing that really gets to you over time is the incessant roaring, the howling, the shrieking of the winds for 8 hours, 10, 12, 14. To the point that you feel like you're going a bit mad. Well, this is our 5 month, 6 month, 7th month, 8. Well, if you think back to March, yeah. A 10 month hurricane. With all the howling and all the shrieking and all the terror. And there are psychological and psychiatric sequelae that come with that. I go on my social media and I see people I know posting photos of them on boats and hanging out on the rocks and the cliffs and the little beaches, for lack of a better term, over at Summersville Lake. And I want to go there so badly. I want to laugh and have fun. Feel the warmth of the sun on my skin. Go up to the little ice cream stand for a cooling cone of some sort of soft serve. Rent a paddle board and learn how to do that shit. Or learn to kayak. This was the summer that was going to be all of that. And instead, no. Instead, for the most part, I stay on this little acre here and I get to feel the warm sun on my skin and I putter around at the grill and the griddle and hack away at trying to cut down some of the grass. And Agnes can't get out in it because of her immunocompromised condition. She can't be in the sun. And so, being as how we've been together for 27 years, that takes a lot of fun out of being in the sun for me. And I know it is taking, it's taking a mental toll. This is not me complaining. This is me saying, I understand what's involved with taking this pandemic seriously and trying to do my small part to keep from making it worse. Others, though,
Can't or won't.
I mean, this can be, in some ways, this is going to be a tough week. You know, I've always got something to complain about. We had 2 weeks of cloudy, rainy, gray weather, and I was just about at my wit's end by the time the sun showed up then. Well, this week is the opposite of that. Now, this time of year, the weather can change from minute to minute, but it looks like tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday are going to be nothing if not glorious. 91 magnificent, sweltering degrees. I don't know. Maybe you can social distance on a hiking trail or something. But the thing is, you, I, we, our community, we're trying to do our best to keep ourselves and those we love safe. And out there in the wider nation, there are tens of thousands of scofflaws and maggots and other feckless trash and they're not okay and they're not okay with doing the right thing. They're going to do what they want to do, come hell, come high water. And they are more than happy to sicken the rest of us. Over the weekend, the bioterrorist in chief, who wants to kill our children and grandchildren, retweeted, of all people, Chuck Woolery. And that thing went around the world at light speed. Because Chuck Woolery said he doesn't trust the doctors and he doesn't trust the scientists and he doesn't trust anybody. Because the Democrats and their scientists are just using the coronavirus as a hoax to try to make sure that Donald Trump doesn't get reelected. And he, Chuck Woolery, of such massive expertise, because he once hosted a program called Love Connection. He, Chuck Woolery, does not trust Dr. Fauci. He and Dr. Fauci, by the way, are roughly the same age. One has spent his life trying to prevent pandemics and spread of deadly infectious disease, and the other spent part of his career telling people to spin a giant roulette wheel. Tell me the goddess of irony isn't at work. As to the size of the New York City school system, Lee in New York says, New York City's public school system, operated by the New York City Department of Education, is the largest in the world. More than 1.1 million students are taught in more than 1,700 public schools with a budget of nearly $25 billion. Let's fire up the calculator here. 1 million 100,000 times 0.016 equals? If 0.016 was the multiplier that I was thinking about, the death rate, the alleged death rate for children from COVID-19, then what Betsy DeVos and Donald Trump and all these other maggots are suggesting for New York City is that New York City parents be prepared to watch 17,600 children die. What do you do when someone deliberately targets 17,600 children? Of course, that's just New York. How many school children are there in the entirety of the country? That's the number we need to know. Because that's the number whereby we can extrapolate the number of children that Betsy DeVos and Donald Trump and Mike Pence and Peter Navarro and Jared and Ivanka want to see die. That's the number of children they are trying to kill. And we have no right of self-defense whatsoever, save to refuse and to keep our children home. Because that's the only hope we have of saving them from the homicidal ideation of these maggots. Do you see it some other way? Is there any other way to see it? Precisely, Kyle. Kyle says, God damn it, these are terrorists and we're being governed by fucking terrorists. Yes! Absolutely. Flavio pointing out, Chuck Woolery, third-tier game show host and successful hawker of reverse mortgages. Steve says there are 57 million school kids in the country. Well, let's work with that as a rough number, because at least we need to know the targeting data. 57 million. 0.01. Why, that's only 912,000 American children that they're trying to kill. As to the New York kids, Lee says, 17,600 children dying? If it's by guns, Republicans don't care. If it's by disease, same result, different path. And Steve's been looking at the COVID Act Now map, as I do every day. When I look at the map, it's essentially the Confederacy with a couple of exceptions. That's blowing up. Bob, is this going to be the end of the Union? The fault lines are right along those borders. Well, I suggest that more drastic action has to be taken. For instance, if New York does not want to go back into where it has already come from, then something more significant than saying, well, we require you to voluntarily quarantine if you're coming from a hot spot, has to be in place. Constitutionally, I don't know how a state goes about closing its borders. But New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Vermont, all need to close their borders to Florida, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Kentucky, and West Virginia. And absolutely not let anyone in from any of those states at all, period. No temperature checks. No voluntary quarantining. Don't come in. And frankly, for people in those states, don't go out. Because anything less allows people like DeSantis and Abbott and Meemaw and Kemp and Colonel Governor Taint Reeves of Mississippi to continue their bioterrorist ways. McGovernor in South Carolina, Stan. And continue to do what I predicted months ago. Weaponize this virus. And the stakes are so high as to be incalculable. I mean, that's almost 1 million children nationwide. To say nothing of the teachers, the administrators. No. Brendan, my apologies, Bob, but I just have to vent. In a recent response to a reporter's questions that orange-tinted gonorrhea discharge from Satan's urethra said that testing creates new cases, emphasis mine, unfucking believable. Of course, the reporter didn't challenge that remark. We're all screwed, Bob. Yeah, it's. I watched an interview yesterday evening on CNN between Wolf Blitzer and Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson. And what passes for hard-hitting questions from Wolf are roughly the equivalent of a gently lobbed marshmallow. And that's just another level of failure. Freight Train Frank says, if these in-person school directives take effect, regardless of the outcome of the election, we will nonetheless have stood by and watched the destruction of the faith as we as always had for our public school system. Our public school system will have been destroyed. This is either intentional or not, but the outcome is the same. Hopefully these diabolical directives can be stopped. If they are stopped, they will only be stopped by people acting in concert all over the country. And yes, it's intentional, Frank. A paused school system can be brought back. Furloughed workers can be paid while they are off work. Because we're that big and we're that rich and we can do that. But you have to remember that it has been an article of faith and included in every Republican Party platform for eons, and it has been a talking point for every Republican presidential hopeful, except, of course, Rick Goodhair Smart Glasses Perry, who couldn't remember the departments he wanted to eliminate when he was asked about it. But, yeah, the destruction of the Department of Education and the return of SCOOIN to our communities and local control. You can't be a Republican and not despise the Department of Education, and that is why Betsy DeVos is at the head of it. Chuck Woolery, Scott in San Diego, says, is an idiot. You may remember that he was the original host of the 1970s NBC daytime version of Wheel of Fortune. That's what I just said. And after talking about roulette wheels of death in every community in the United States, lo and behold, that old fart presided over telling people to spin a roulette wheel, a giant one. When contract renewal time came around, old Chucky asked his employer, Merv Griffin, who created the show, for a substantial raise. He didn't get it. Chuck went on to host other game shows and to try to revive what there was of his country music singing career, only to wind up as the TV pitchman for Blue Emu Pain Relief Ointment. As Trump would say,
sad.
As for Chucky Boy's notion that the COVID-19 pandemic is a hoax, Wheel of Fortune is still on the air, but its current corporate packager, Sony, has suspended tapings of new episodes. Would they risk millions in profit by not taping new episodes over an easily provable hoax? Hell no! COVID-19's real, Chuck. And if you stop huffing the blue emu fumes for a second, maybe your head would clear up enough to grasp this medical fact. Thanks, Scott. That's a good point. Sony wouldn't just quit it, stop taping over something that they weren't deadly sure was a threat to human life. Flavio sent along a tweet. Representative Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, bless her heart, and I say that in a good way, tweeted, at Betsy DeVos, you have no plan. Teachers, kids, and parents are fearing for their lives. You point to a private sector that's put profits over people and claimed the lives of thousands of essential workers. I wouldn't trust you to care for a houseplant, let alone my child. And that's we need more, not less of that. They need to be confronted at every opportunity and told what horrible, terrible, bad, awful, really rotten human beings they are. Let's not just focus on kids dying from COVID-19, Billable Rick says. In focusing just on deaths from COVID-19, the maggot in chief isn't focusing on the severe and lifetime health problems that many children and other people will develop and suffer by having had COVID. Effects on almost all parts of the body, including the heart, lungs, brain, circulatory system, and other organs. The more that doctors learn about COVID-19, the insidiousness of that disease becomes more apparent. Yes, it does, and that's absolutely true. When they say most children survive it, almost all children survive it, that has another meaning in differently expressed in English. Most children survive it, but we don't know what that survival looks like. We don't know whether that survival means that they will be more prone to asthma, have compromised immune systems. A good example is chickenpox. Chickenpox is a childhood illness mistakenly believed by some to be relatively benign, such that the former governor of the Commonwealth of Kentucky deliberately sent his children to a chickenpox party to get them sick so that they'd then have immunity. But the chickenpox virus, once the chickenpox has passed, becomes resident in the spinal cord fluid of its victim. And it lays there, dormant, until, usually after age 50, for reasons we do not fully understand, the virus reactivates out of the spinal cord fluid. And it creates a hellishly painful rash, a belting around the thoracic region, primarily. And we know that disease as shingles. We only got a chickenpox vaccine in the late 90s. And only after that did we get a shingles vaccine. And yet people are constantly braying that, oh, we'll have a vaccine for COVID-19 by January. Color me skeptical. And while I'm not an anti-vaxxer, would you trust the administration of a president who has told his followers to drink bleach and stick black lights up their asses? Who would probably do anything in his power to profit from any kind of vaccine if he said, well, we've got a vaccine, everybody line up. Because I wouldn't. But Billable Rick, your point is very well taken indeed. And with any luck at all, we could like I said, we could sure use a few more Ayanna Pressleys to speak truth to power. Call them out. Dare them to say shit to your face. And then watch them, cowards that they are, run. I've noticed something, says Ron in Raleigh. You ever notice that the right wing keeps telling us how Hollywood and California is just full to the gunnels with liberals? Clint Eastwood, Dean Cain, Bruce Willis, Diane Keaton, Bo Derek, Chuck Woolery, Pat Sajak. You left out that really giant asshole. You know the one I'm thinking about. He was the voice of Hades in the Disney Hercules movie. Wood. Last name Wood. I could go on and on, Ron says, but the Golden State's full of fucking maggots. On a sad note, Kelly Preston, the 28-year-long wife of John Travolta, passed after a long struggle against breast cancer. R.I.P., Kelly. Yeah, I saw that news, and I wondered if John Travolta prevented her from having appropriate treatment because Scientology. Well, I didn't know it was called that. Flavio says shingles, a.k.a. St. Anthony's Fire. James Wood, yes. Yes, thank you, Billable Rick. James Wood, that was the dickhead I was thinking about. Jeremy writes, and by the way, Jeremy remains the only one responding to Darlene's birthday challenge thus far. We got $105 to go on her challenge and Laborman's. If we could meet those challenges, that means we're done with fundraising for the day. And here we are almost halfway through the program. Please. These are brutally hard months. And I know it. Don't hurt yourself. But if you can, be mighty helpful. Jeremy says, the right is losing its mind over the coverage of the doctor who reported for NBC who got sick with what he thought was COVID after a flight. Sounds like he never tested positive, so it's another unknown virus, so the same play it down. COVID is fake bullshit. We'll continue. Wolf Blitzer's marshmallows. Wolf Blitzer, one of the more ironically named personalities, perplexes me. Does he at least moisten the marshmallow before tossing it so it'll stick? A culinary question on behalf of a friend, your buddy Dave in the blind. P.S. It seems the good folks in the press are going to goose step behind the little animals. Somebody pass me the wildwood flower. Next thing you know, you're just wandering around behind the little animals. Yep. Thanks, Dave. COVID-19 vaccine? Lee says, if the World Health Organization or other real scientists confirm it, I would take it. Precisely. But no, not just on a... not on a dare from this gang in the White House. For all you know, they'd be injecting you with bleach. Or Lysol. Thank you, Ralphs. Yes, James Wood. And as to their threat, the administration's threat to withhold federal funding from schools if they don't reopen and allow these maggots to start killing children. Contrary to what Trump and Betsy DeVos on her bookshelves, wait a minute, because there are certainly no books, Betsy DeVos on her bookshelves say, the administration has no authority to withhold federal aid to schools that Congress has already approved and appropriated. In theory, the constitutional separation of power would seem to prohibit such presidential overreach. However, that may not stop Trump from trying to do so, and the Supreme Court from upholding that decision, like it did with certain aspects of Trump's stupid border wall. And so, an hour and 20 minutes on this topic. But Lord God, Billy Bob, have we got morons? Oodles and oodles. Enter Diana Ploss. She's from New Hampshire. And she's a maggot right-wing broadcaster. She had a maggot right-wing radio show at WSMN in New Hampshire. Had. That's because it's because of something that happened this weekend. Diana Karen Ploss was ambling down the street, headed to the station, when she saw a construction crew and observed a white construction worker speaking Spanish with the other members of the construction crew. This was something up with which she was not prepared to put. Oh, hell no.
You speaking English?
Well, a lot of them speak English, but I just like to speak Spanish.
Okay, but it is America.
It is America.
It is America. You should be speaking English. You should be speaking English. They work for the state. You should be speaking English.
Because Diana Karen Ploss is the language Karen. This was taking place in Nashua, New Hampshire, mind you. Diana Ploss, who was allowed to get behind a microphone, doesn't realize that, well, a little further north of her, the first language spoken in the New World was some Scandinavian variation on Danish. And then a little bit later, we get Portuguese, Italian, and Spanish. Or I should say Italian, Spanish, and Portuguese. You even get Swedish. And Dutch. And finally, in 1607... you get English. So,
You're in America. You speak English.
You stupid twit.
I'm sad to report, and you might want to get the hockey puck, that this goes on for a bit. I don't know why the construction worker didn't just ignore this dipshit. But he didn't. And she kept going. Because Diana Ploss is oblivious to the first rule of holes. When you're in one, stop digging.
What do you work for? Oh, so are these people... Is English. Doesn't matter. It's still English. It's English. 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 Is anybody here?
There's no official language of America. Doesn't matter.
Illegal? Are these guys illegal? What's the name of this company? Look at this. It's America. Speak English. Speak English. So this is a foreman working for this company, Morin's.
It's Morin Monday. The company may be Morin's, but she's a Moran. And she's hollering, "Speak English," with a New England Yankee accent so thick you could cut it with a spoon. Beautiful.
He's speaking Spanish to these guys. So your tax doll is up here in New Hampshire. That's what's going on here. That is...
You stupid woman. Those Hispanic men can probably outwork white guys by a factor of 10. And they do. But she doesn't want to hear any Spanish in New Hampshire.
This is what's going on. So now they have people who don't speak English who are putting in this stuff that taxpayers are paying for. And look what they're doing. This is communism.
It's communism. Wow. Communism? Really? Communism. Robert in Australia, listening to this. Land of the free. Doesn't that mean you can speak any language you choose? Including Klingon. Everyone should learn to swear in Klingon for these Karens. Well, I'll give you a cowbell and a ptah for that, Robert. Ay, 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 ay. Do let's all learn to... Maybe swear in Klingon needs to become a hashtag. Jeremy says, this is maybe 3 hours from my house. Fuck! Well, remember, there's a long and nasty streak of Republicanism in New Hampshire. They got how many fucking Sununus are there in New Hampshire? It's like there's a plague of them up there. Isn't their governor another Sununu? And they're a toxic lot, too. Of course, you got to give Diana Karen Ploss, you got to cut her a little slack because she's probably still mega bummed out. Because her god emperor didn't show up and was afraid and embarrassed and terrified that he wouldn't draw a huge crowd. And in fact, that aforementioned Republican governor said, no, I'm not going to his rally. Are you kidding? No social distancing? No masks? What do I look, stupid? What do I look? No. So she's probably a little bit upset.
This is communism. Look at this. They're taking over these streets. This, what they're doing up here in Nashua, is permanent. Permanent. So here's a private company. Wake up. No residents. I want to know, where's Governor Sununu? Where's Governor Sununu?
Lady, he probably doesn't work for the construction company. Pretty sure he doesn't. He's governor. Bet you voted for him. There we go. Kapla! Thank you, Randy and PA. Kapla!
Maybe she'd settle down if she got a nice, heaping, squirming bowl of gach, just like Mama used to make. That's a nice Star Trek reference at the halfway point of the program.
What's your problem?
Why are you harassing
me? Are they in America?
Yes.
Okay, they should be speaking English.
Why? Who said, what,
they
why?
Should be speaking English.
Because what?
They should be speaking English. Are they illegal aliens? They don't speak the language?
What does speaking the language have to do with
do they
that?
Not speak the language?
When you drive into the state, what does it say?
Do they not speak the language?
I have no idea.
Okay, why do you care?
Because
I wasn't talking to you.
You're harassing me.
I have a right.
To harass people?
I'm high.
An African-American man comes to their defense. He's wearing a mask, being intelligent, and that really stings when he offers her the, what does it say on the license plates query? You'll notice she doesn't answer. Live free or die. That's what it says on the New Hampshire license plate. Oh, and yes, Diana Ploss. Flavio says, please play the Ploss audio. Hysterical. My favorite today. She's hysterical. A caricature of herself. Wow. But please let's remember that this didn't, and I'm sorry, I feel the need to add this caveat. This isn't something that you get because Donald Trump. This is a degree of nativism, if we can call it that. Yes, Eileen, I did say she was a broadcaster. She had a maggot radio show in Nashua. Eileen pointing out she needs some journalism training and some speech training. But this is stuff that goes all the way back, as I've referenced before, to Richard Hofstadter, early 1960s, and something he wrote called The Paranoid Style in American Politics. And it goes hand in hand with, scare quotes, populism. Yeah. Nasty. I know. Ron and Raleigh says, God save me from white women. Continuing. Wait a minute. Yeah, continuing the Klingon theme for the evening. God save me from white women. Ron and Raleigh says, where's my batleth when I need it? I know. There was an awesome, it was in the late 90s, there was an awesome computer video game called Klingon Honor Guard. I think I've mentioned it before. Disruptor pistols, batleths. And apparently on Kronos there are these feral hogs that will just tear the shit out of you. Yeah. Oh, it was the tropical storm, James in Illinois says, not the fear of a small crowd. No, Bob, tropical storm, wet hair, disaster, disaster, the Don cannot get wet. He and his bouffant could drown. There you go, being all optimistic again. But it is nice to see a decent American come to these guys. And you know what they're doing? They're planting trees. It's communism. Communist trees. I know, my New Hampshire accent needs work.
How am I harassing them?
You're yelling at them.
Am I yelling?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, okay. Are they illegal?
I'm trying to enjoy my lunch.
So then go enjoy your lunch. You're Why are you wearing a mask?
Why am I wearing a mask?
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a global pandemic.
Really? Okay. Okay, so this guy decided that he's going to come over here and be a social justice warrior. Right, I know, really.
Because I was 6 feet away outside.
Oh, it's over from the other side. Because he's a black man, and he's going to protect the brown man from this white woman who's practicing white privilege because she happened to walk by and heard this guy talking to all of these guys doing this work in Spanish. So I'm going into the studio.
She ran away. Bravely ran away, away.
I didn't.
When the black man reared his ugly head, she bravely turned her tail and fled.
I never.
Yep. Oh, these people. Well, there's a happy ending to the story. This thing went viral up there. And suddenly a petition appeared out of nowhere demanding that she be fired and that her radio show go the hell away. 6,000 people signed it. And as of yesterday, WSMN announced that Diana Karen Ploss was, quote, no longer associated or affiliated in any way with WSMN. Let's see if they've got the courage of their convictions and stick to it when she decides to work from home or whatever and wants to be on their air. She'll be picked up by Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, or Fox, or one of those wingnut welfare agencies. And her public display of racism and xenophobia will actually work to her benefit. And along the way, there will be more blathering about cancel culture. This, of course, is a term that was invented by the right wing to describe consequences of bad actions when people make stupid, ignorant, biased, hate-filled remarks in public and then wind up losing their jobs. And then go and get jobs with wingnut welfare agencies. Cancel culture. Chris in Germany and I were discussing something a couple of days ago. There's this thing out there that caused a bit of a stir. It is one of these stupider things that I have run across in recent memory. It's a bunch of hand-wringing, pearl-clutching liberals and whatnot, who signed off on a letter published at harpers.org, a letter on justice and open debate. And now it's simply referred to as the Harper's letter, in which a bunch of jelly soft, whiny people complain about cancel culture. And I read it, and the first thing that came to my mind was, I wonder if this sounded better in the original Vichy French. And it's got a shit ton of names on it. Some I found depressing, because they were people I respected. If you go to harpers.org, you can see the list of people who signed it, including Noam Chomsky. This is horrible. David Frum, the guy who wrote the Axis of Evil speech, if I recall correctly, the Bush administration official who was actively involved in promoting the lies that led to the slaughter of a million innocent Iraqi civilians, he signed it. J.K. Rowling signed it. The single largest hater of trans people, possibly on planet Earth. And it is depressingly, Zephyr Teachout signed it. Randy Weingarten of the American Federation of Teachers signed it. People make mistakes. It's they complain of a let's see.
Whatever the arguments around each particular incident, the result has been to steadily narrow the boundaries of what can be said without the threat of reprisal. We are already paying the price in greater risk aversion among writers, artists, and journalists who fear for their livelihoods if they depart from the consensus or even lack sufficient zeal in agreement. This stifling atmosphere will ultimately harm the most vital causes of our time. The restriction of debate, whether by a repressive government or an intolerant society, two wildly different things, I might add, invariably hurts those who lack power and makes everyone less capable of democratic participation. Really? You want democratic participation from the Nazis, Noam? You want democratic participation from the fucking Klan? You want democratic participation from Diana Ploss, who would gleefully murder every non-white human being within her sight? Who wants to compel people to speak languages that are not their own?
We need to preserve the possibility of good faith disagreement without dire professional consequences. You idiots!
Oh, you idiots!
Have you even been paying attention for the last 30 years? There's not a good faith argument to be had on the Republican side of any goddamn thing. Not a one.
If we won't defend the very thing on which our work depends, we shouldn't expect the public or the state to defend it for us.
Shut up! They're setting up a straw man and knocking it down and just beating the stuffing out of it. Because the people being canceled are the people who deliberately say obnoxious, hate-filled, revolting things with nothing other than the desire to hurt other people. Now, what role does such conduct have in a society that would prefer to put the adjective civil in front of it? Jesus, these people.
The free exchange of information and ideas, the lifeblood of a liberal society, is daily becoming more constricted.
Wow. We can't have a liberal society if we don't allow people to just vent outrageous manifestations of unadulterated 200 proof hate. We can't do that. That's why we can't have nice things, because we're not nicer to the goddamn Nazis. Wynton Marsalis signed this. Holy shit. And it takes off with this pablum-laced notion that our cultural institutions are facing a moment of trial. Powerful protests for racial and social justice are leading to overdue demands for police reform, along with wider calls for greater equality and inclusion across our society, not least in higher education, journalism, philanthropy, and the arts. But this needed reckoning has also intensified a new set of moral attitudes and political commitments that tend to weaken our norms of open debate and toleration of differences in favor of ideological conformity. Well, it is a paradox, and it even has a name, I think. I can't come up with it at the moment. That the only way to have a tolerant society is to not tolerate intolerant people. Like I said, it's a paradox. It's true. If you want a tolerant society, You cannot let Nazis raise their ugly heads. If you want a tolerant society, you cannot put up with the hate and the xenophobia and the bigotry of a Donald Trump and his goddamn supporters. These largely elitist liberal jackasses are making an argument that is unsustainable. Angelo, writing from the People's Republic of the Bronx, says, what? Equal time for the Klan? Do we really need to have hate speech in the marketplace of ideas? Really? Really? And Angelo, if you go and you read the list of who signed it, you'll probably be sicker than I was. Yeah, we gotta sit down and get out our fucking ukuleles and play Kumbaya with the Nazis. You know, it reminds me. I've got that litany that I repeat every time I mention the name of the governor of Florida, but it is unavoidable. The conclusion is unavoidable that every human being in Florida who voted for Ron DeSantis instead of Andrew Gillum voted alongside the Nazis. Every person who voted for Ron Monkey Up DeSantis voted alongside the Klan, the skinheads. The Identity Europa Bunch. Proud Boys. Boogaloo Boys. They voted alongside that guy that mailed bombs all over the country to various and sundry Democrats. And according to these jackasses, we have to provide a seat at the table for those fucks. What the Yeah, I know. Jimmy says, where's the wall to keep people like this PLOS thing out of America? Because let's be clear. None of those assholes want to contribute to a better America. And they are not savable. They are not teachable. They cannot, will not learn. And they hear only through their wallets. It's disgusting. Oh, and I'm going to the phones in a sec. By the way, Robert in Australia writes, COVID-19 outbreak in New South Wales. That's Sydney and the surrounding area, the most populous state in Australia. When they reopened the schools here in Australia, they almost immediately had to shut down a number of schools due to COVID-19 outbreaks. So good luck with opening schools in the USA. With the state of Victoria locked down and 9 public housing towers surrounded by the police, we now have an outbreak in New South Wales. There are now 21 new COVID-19 cases linked to the Crossroads Hotel at Casula. And it looks like patient zero may be a truck driver. The outbreak dates back to July 3rd, so I expect we'll be hearing about more and more cases pretty soon. But here's the rub. You will, probably will, Robert. But even your lackluster, feckless, right-wing government down there is responding about a gajillion times more appropriately and responsibly than ours here. But I take your point. And stay safe. Stay safe, Robert. stay safe. Ron in Raleigh says, cancel culture is bullshit. How does this so-called cancel culture manifest itself? Louis C.K. was supposed to have been canceled, but as far as I can tell, he's still working after a short vacation. Show me one person that's lost any goddamn thing to the so-called cancel culture. The folks that signed this bullshit letter are virtue signaling. I'm ashamed of Noam and the rest. This is the other side of the coin of political correctness. The only thing that people who whine about being politically correct are people that want to freely call black folks the N-word or Jews, the K-word, or any other group a derogatory name. If not, how else are they restrained? I'm pulling my hair out in clumps. I know. It's... And there's, you know, there's always going to be some bunch of squishy liberals, you know, and this is why everybody hates us, okay? Because we won't even, and Robert Frost said it in a poem one time, I'm so liberal, I won't take my own side in a fight. These damned fools would gladly explain to the Nazis how they support their rights of free speech all the way to the oven. Now get in. Okay. I just want you to know I'm getting in, but I just want you to know your voice is important in, and your voice is valid in the greater discussion. We wouldn't want to cancel you for being a Nazi. That wouldn't be liberal of us. Fucking fools. In the short space of a little more than 3 years, we've gone from punching a Nazi in the face to a bunch of millionaires signing off on a letter offering to let the Nazis punch the rest of us back. If that's not Moran Monday material, I don't know what is. I somehow have this idea that this would be a better country if it didn't have maggots and Nazis and Klansmen in it. Or does that mean what? What does that mean? That we wouldn't... What would we lose? What do maggots and Nazis and Klansmen bring to our society? Do they bake the best bread? Do they make the best potato salad? Do they design the best buildings? Do they build the best cars? Are they the most committed to climate change? What? Beats the hell out of me. Well, and there's one potential answer. Randy in PA says simply, cheap labor. Scratch a conservative, you'll eventually get down to a place where the bottom line is just cheap labor. Hey, thank you, Libby. Thank you for jumping in on Darlene's birthday challenge. We've got a little over an hour to meet it and finish it off. We've got $95 to go. I hope we can knock it out. I sincerely do. Darlene put that on the table Friday as a celebration of her birthday, and would very much like to have other people celebrating with her. So maybe, please, I hate to see challenges go by the board, especially when it's like this and we're celebrating her birthday with her. Thank you, Libby. And thank you, Jeremy. James in Illinois says, Karen and the Mexicans from El Salvador or wherever. I smell a book deal. Of course. Because the notion of cancel culture is a cover for the fact that there are seldom consequences. What? Did we owe a greater degree of sympathy to Harvey Weinstein? Is that it? Yeah, are these sad fools worried about what was their name? McCloskeys, the lawyers in St. Louis that pointed guns at peaceful protesters? Just who are they worried about? You know, when you sign your name next to J.K. Rowling's name, you're putting yourself in some pretty hateful company. Oh, well, there's what they do well. Steve in New York says, they know how to get the whites really white. Bleach. Another Bleach reference. Oh, and this is cool. Sumon, subject line, Cricket takes a knee. Cricket has resumed amidst the COVID-19, but without anyone in the stadium. West Indies is touring England. These two countries have shared a healthy rivalry for more than 70 years, but all the players and the umpires took a knee for the Black Lives Matter movement last week on the field. I don't think I've ever seen something like this before. I hope the trend continues. And provides a link to The Guardian. You can also see one of the greatest bowlers in the history of cricket, Michael Holding, talk about how he feels. On this Moran Monday, I figured I should share a non-Moran story. Well, we need it. Thank you, Sumon. We need the uplift. And one of these days, I'd just like, and I'm not being a smartass here, one of these days, I'd just like to understand cricket. Maybe you can help, Sumon. I mean, I see the bat, I see the wickets, I know who the bowler is, that's the pitcher, right? There's a vague resemblance to baseball, but it's only that, vague. And baseball itself has its own convolutions and vagaries. The infield fly rule, for starters. The infield fly rule, when you get ready to go to law school, you have to take the LSAT. And the LSAT consists almost entirely of analogies. This is to that as that is to blank. Or this is to that as the other is to blank. Well, the people who have been to law school will get this. The infield fly rule is to baseball as the rule against perpetuities is to the law. Hey, thank you very kindly to Colin jumping in. Thank you to Ralphs for jumping in. Tremendously helpful. And thank you to Samson, and we're done. Thank you for joining in and celebrating Darlene's birthday with her. Thank you so much. So much indeed. Jimmy says, Nazis. They bring compost, Bob. Wowzer. Compost. And thank you, Mark, for jumping in and celebrating Darlene's birthday with her. Thank you, Mark, in Florida. And then David in South Carolina, Stan sends the following along. Trader Tot. Trader Tot declares, remember, it's not racist if it's racist against white people. And Charlie Pierce responded to that by saying, lawyer up, sluggo. And it's not, I mean, I guess I should. It is impossible to be racist against white people. There can be bias. There can be phobic behavior. But because racism is born of and created by white culture and white society, there cannot be anti-white racism. Because racism is intrinsically, foundationally white. Try to explain that, however, to a maggot. You're better off trying to explain it to the southbound end of a northbound jackass. So, that's that. And it would be nice if we could get over this notion that in order to be a liberal democracy, we somehow have to tolerate fucking Nazis. Our buddy Reverbo, the human boy, in regard to the Harper's letter, I quickly thought that had really less to do with traditional constitutional values and yet another liberal move to get credit by again turning over on their backs. I thought more of them got it. They don't. They don't. There's an old line out there that says, the condemned ate heartily. Thank you to an anonymous friend for jumping in on Darlene's birthday celebration. That's tremendous. Thank you. Well, that sounds like a lovely idea, Suman. It absolutely does. When the Rona calms down, I'd love to see Phoenix. Suman says, well then, come on over to Phoenix and we'll have a cricket watching party while eating chicken tikka masala and drinking tea. I'm definitely down with the chicken tikka masala, and if we can get some nice, flavorful decaf tea, I'll be right there for that, too. Just can't stand the buzz. All right, let's go over and see what Scott's got going on. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob.
How are you? I hear you. I hear the fan in the background, but I hear you.
I'm sorry. Can you hear it in my voice, the fear and trembling that I bring to this call today?
No.
Oh. Because I don't know, man.
The other thing I'm glad I can't hear is your spoon tinkling on your cup.
Well, you've raised many good points and posed many good questions. And I think I have an answer, an all-encompassing answer.
A unified field theory, as it were?
Yes, indeed. Now, may I sing it for you?
They're singing?
Yes, yes.
Oh, dear.
Hey, I don't come to the show without having extensive preparations made for my arrival and appearance.
Otherwise known as shtick.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Well, here goes. Who's the leader of the Klan? What?
Who's ready? The leader of the Klan?
Not made for you and me, D-O-N-A-L-D, T-R-U-M-P, P-E,
pee on you next week,
Donald Trump, forever let us hold his, never mind, I don't know, man, I really am, there is no small bit of fear and trembling associated with this call today. I wasn't going to call But after that woman up in Nashua, New Hampshire, screeching.
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
That's right, neighbor. Pepperidge Farm remembers. Yes, oh, man, I could go for a milk chocolate Milano cookie right about now. Baby. Those are good.
I'm partial to the dark myself, and I like the raspberry and the orange Milanos. Whoa.
Oh, God. God help us. And the goldfish crackers aren't shabby. A couple of handfuls of those, that's
you know, I'll probably get emails telling me that you know, they're killing something on another planet or this planet or whatever. I'm more of a Cheez-Its guy than a goldfish guy. I just don't think the goldfish have much flavor.
Well, you got to get the
although they are adorable floating in a bowl of soup. I got to tell you.
They certainly are. In a bowl of Campbell's tomato soup, are you kidding me? You got your own little lunchtime aquarium right there on the table, Bob. Jesus. Well, I don't know. Maybe I was ahead of the curve. But almost 50 years ago, would you take lunch to a Nazi in the dead of night?
No, but you did.
I did. Have I told you this before?
Yeah, your high school interview, a Nazi project?
Well, yeah, no, that's another deal. I wanted to bring a Nazi in to sociology class for show and tell. But they wouldn't let me do it, so they gave me a tape recorder and a bunch of index cards with questions from the students. And I went over and interviewed the guy. I couldn't remember his name for the longest time. But after George Lincoln Rockwell was assassinated coming out of a laundromat in Arlington, Virginia in 1967, the next guy in line to be the head Nazi was a guy named Matt Kahel, K-O-H-E-L. He was a commander. Ooh, had the nifty uniform and everything. So I hauled my ponderous bulk over to Arlington to the headquarters of the NSWPP, the National Socialist White People's Party, baby, and interviewed that fool. But that's not the story. The other story was, afterwards, I would call it. Now, see, this is the difference between the two of us. In the dead of night, I would call the Nazi on duty on the all-night shift to waste his time and to get into his head. And I've had these long conversations, and was he
informally referred to as the HNIC?
The head Nazi in charge. Well, maybe. But the guy on the overnight shift was like the low man in the squad, because he had the worst gig in town. He had to sit there and answer the phone. So this guy, Richard, he's dead. I won't give his last name. We would talk, and I would just deliberately waste his time, bait him with questions designed to elicit that long, involved, stupid answers, you know, so that his line would be busy. This was in the days before call waiting. So his line would be busy so that some Nazi wannabe couldn't call in and get the pep talk. See, there was a method to my madness, Bob.
Yes, I see that now.
But anyway, he got in trouble for having long conversations with me, apparently, because I guess the head Nazi in charge tried to call in and kept getting a busy signal and wondered what the hell was going on. So anyway, long story short, I called him one night and he said, well, you know, I really can't talk on the phone tonight. And I said, well, do you want me to bring you something to eat? And he said, well, sure, because he was hungry. You work up a powerful appetite sitting there being a Nazi ball, answering the phone on the whole night shift. So there was this little hamburger place, little chain around the D.C. area called Little Tavern, and they had the worst fucking hamburgers on earth. They were not white castles.
But if yeah, don't take him Ollie's trolley burgers or anything.
No, but if you're out drinking for 3 or 4 hours at the bars and the discos and stuff, and the bars have closed, and you drive back to Northern Virginia with one eye closed, and you're hungry for something, you can't go. You're already drunk, you know. So, you know, there's no need in having high standards in terms of Epicurean delights. No, no. Head on over to the little tavern and pick you up a bag. For $5, you could get more hamburgers than you could eat in one sitting. I mean, that's how bad these burgers were. They were 20 cents a piece. But anyway, so I said, okay, well, let me swing by Little Tavern.
Sounds like you're describing. It sounds like you're describing the D.C. area version of Crystals. Were they little and square? Yeah, little and square with steamed buns?
They were round with steamed buns and horrendous onions on them and pickles
and mustard
and mustard. But so anyway, I said, well, Dick, why don't I swing by Little Tavern and I'll buy a bag of burgers and something to drink. And I'll bring them over to you. And that way you don't have to tie up the phone. And he liked that idea. But he had one concern. He said, is there Coke or Pepsi coming out of the fountain where you get your fountain drink? And I said, you know, I don't know. But what possible difference could it make? Well, apparently the Nazis had some theory that one of the companies, either Coke or Pepsi, I forget which, was on board with the civil rights movement. So whichever one it was, Dick didn't want to drink none of that, okay? So I'm telling you, I'm trying to do the guy a solid, bring him some food, and he's bitching at me on whether it's Coke or Pepsi. You know, this is long before the Pepsi challenge. But anyway, so I go over there, and I bring him a bag. He's very happy about it. But I don't know. Maybe I am tolerant in a different way than a lot of folks. I don't have a problem with people like that spouting their nonsense. I really, truly don't. I think it's horrendous, the things that they believe. What are you doing?
What?
Bob?
What?
I'm hearing all kinds of weird noises, and they're coming from your end. What are you doing?
I was answering an email.
An email. Okay, I'm sorry. But anyway, I just... You know, their rhetoric and their thought processes are horrendously awful. But I think we kind of need them in the conversation, or the general conversation at large in the world, because it gives we've got to call them out when they speak up. They're like motivating to me. To me, their sole purpose is to be called out. And you do that. I mean, God knows. You've got a long history of calling these assholes out on the... And the lady up in New Hampshire, how did she arrive at that place? Was she legitimately on her way to somewhere else?
Yeah, she was walking to the station. And in the end, when she scampers away from the black guy... whose lunch she was ruining by being a racist at the construction workers.
Yeah.
She was running away from him, and the last you see of her is her walking through the doors of the station.
Now, did she record the audio or video? Or
yes,
did someone else?
Yes. She proudly recorded herself. And then
so she was doing show prep.
No, I don't know, but she's the one who put it up on social media, for God's sakes.
Okay, so that is how dumb she actually is.
She hung herself on her own petard.
Yeah, she talked herself out of a gig. Jesus. I wonder what else is on the lineup of that station, because you got to figure...
WSMN.
SM, ooh, kinky.
As the wise old owl in the Tootsie Pop commercial says, let's find out. That's WSMN 1590, okay. Nashua, New Hampshire. Nashua's source for news and talk.
Up there with the police calls, 1590. Jesus, I mean, that's what.
Hey, knock it off! I ran a news talk station at 1590 one time.
Jesus.
Show hosts: Mike Apfelberg, Suzanne Koperniak, Liz Gabbert, George Russell, Karen
These
Testerman.
These are not household names.
No,
these are not.
Well, wait a minute, though. Bob's Racing Report. I may have to turn them in.
Did you say racing or racist?
I know. See, I saved that for you. Josh okay. Barnes, Sean Burke, Jim Lawrence, Justin Etling, Lois Herman, Carol Baldwin, Elaine Holden, Crystal Farley, Andy Armstrong, Jim Callahan, Pete Silva, Tim Hawkins, Bob Bardas, Jocelyn Davis, Special Programming, Rose Marie and Ted, Paula Whittier.
Rose Marie and Ted. Now, I got to wonder what the hell that's about.
It says visit their page. You click on it, it just takes you back to the personalities page.
Oh.
Ah, program lineup. Nashua this morning with host George Russell. Community Connections with host Mike Apfelberg. That's 9 to 10 a.m. 10 to 11, The Village Network Hour with host Suzanne Koperniak. 11 to 12, Life with Liz with host Liz Gilbert. 12 to 1, Chick Chattin' Radio with host Karen Testerman.
Holy fuck.
4 to 5 p.m., this is your afternoon drive. Point of View with host Josh Barnes. And then Lather, Rinse, Repeat. 4 to 6 p.m. on Tuesdays, though, is the Jim Lawrence Show with host Jim Lawrence.
Now, on the weekend, is there a... yeah, they have specialty shows. A lot of these stations have specialty shows on the weekend. Is there the Proctology Hour with no...
Saturday, 6 to 8 a.m. is various replays.
Dr. Bend Over?
Yes, yes. 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. is a replay of Bob's Racing Report with hosts Bob Bardas and Bob Bianchi.
Takes two Bobs. Jesus.
Bobbing for racing, I don't know. 10 to 11, Weekend Sports with Jason Crosby. 11 to 12, The Sean Burke Show with host Sean Burke. 3 to 7 p.m., Solid Gold Saturdays with host Jim Callahan.
Hey.
7 p.m. to 8 p.m., Gunsmoke Old Time Classics.
Holy fuck, they got
everything. Oh, wait, wrong. No, okay, I got it. They've got a listen live button. I'm going to check it out this weekend. 8 to 9 p.m., Real Rock Classics with Ted and Rose Marie.
And this is in Nashua.
Yeah.
Not a small town.
Sundays are a vast radio wasteland, as they often are in small town radio.
Yeah.
7 to 8 a.m. Sunday mornings with host Reverend Andy Armstrong. 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Replay the Process with Justin Etling. 9 to 10 a.m. Inspiring Hope with host Lois Herman. 10 to 11 a.m. Monadnock Lyceum Series. 11 to 12, The Voice of Victory with host Pastor Tim Hawkins. Oh, but hey, friends, you want to stay around after the church services end. When you get out and you're headed to the restaurant after the preaching's over with, make sure you tune in to AM 1590 from noon to 2 for Sundays with Sinatra.
That's the only decent thing on the fucking station, Bob. I'd listen to that.
Oh, what I wouldn't give to have the money to just buy it and fire them all. And just put on and put on 24/7, you know, me, Malloy, Rick Smith, Dr. Bill.
God, wouldn't that be great?
Nicole.
Yeah.
And just burn up Nashua. Ah, you bunch of Nazis! You Nazi communists! That's what you are. Nazi communists. I know.
Yeah, there's nothing quite like small town radio. I mean, Nashua is a pretty substantial town, but
I'll bet it still qualifies as a small market. Jeremy is advising me to cut them some slack. NASCAR's Loudon track is only a few miles away from Nashua. So that's probably the racing they're referring to. It's not the...
Yeah, I would imagine.
It's not like, you know, the ponies down at Seabrook or something.
Or dogs, the greyhounds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Woo! Jesus. But I wonder if it's a standalone station or whether it's, you know, after the Communications Act in 96, the door was swung wide open for a single entity to own and control scads of radio stations. It used to be one entity could not own more than 7 AMs, 7 FMs, and 7 TV stations. That's back when...
And you couldn't own the newspaper.
Right, right. But, you know, you got to figure, I don't know how many people live in New Hampshire, but the popular trend in some of these places was for a single, you know, a guy who had made his money selling, you know, with a couple of big automobile lots, a big dealership, would shelter that money by buying a bunch of radio stations, you know, so he'd have losses to report or whatever.
Precisely.
Yeah. Well, isn't the term for that
loss leader?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. It's an accounting thing where they need to show some losses to take deductions and, you know. Well, I hope she lands on her feet somewhere.
Well, I was thinking she could land on something else, but, you know, I'm mean. By the way, we have a question to your Coke or Pepsi dilemma.
Yeah.
Mark in Florida, who jumped in on Darlene's birthday celebration a little bit ago. Mark in Florida says, Nazi Germany and Coca-Cola, and you can thank fellow fascist Italy for Fanta. And Coke went on to buy Fanta.
Oh, wow, that's right, they did.
So your buddy Dick probably didn't drink Pepsi.
So Pepsi, to them, was the bad guy. I thought Coca-Cola, based in Atlanta, was a forerunner in the civil rights movement.
I don't.
Like they hired.
I do know they had a huge German presence, because even in post-war Germany, there's a movie out there, and I can't remember who's in it, but the plot centers on a Coca-Cola subsidiary in Berlin.
Oh, it was James Cagney's last film, 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Arlene Francis was in it, and I forget who the young ingenue and her boyfriend were, but yeah, 1, 2, 3. It's not a bad little movie. I forget who. I want to say that Billy Wilder directed it. It was a director of that.
Well, but it was Cagney, but there was a love interest, you know, an ingenue love interest, and well, I don't know. And last night, for some reason or another, because I went down the YouTube rabbit hole, Agnes and I did, and I found a lovely little a clip of Johnny Carson interviewing Lee Marvin.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, that voice, just that voice. And he was talking about what a... He was deriding his own profession, saying, "This is a hell of a way to make a living, running, yeah, being a grown man and running around pretending all the time." And yeah, of course, Lee Marvin, I believe, was a Marine and got shot all to shit at. I think it was Okinawa, because that was just brutal.
Decorated Marine.
Yeah, and by the way, the Marines are locked down on Okinawa now because they got 60 fucking cases of COVID-19. When the Marine brass can't even get the Marine contingent to practice social distancing and stay safe, you know, we're just all fucked up. We are. And the government on Okinawa is like, yeah, we don't trust you guys anymore.
Yeah,
of course, there's a long, long history of problems, you know, rape and things like that. And this is just the latest. That's a good idea. Dave in the Blind says, buy that station in Nashua, and on weekends you could have Tara Devlin to pop by. That would really drive those New Hampshire right-wing nut jobs crazy. Signed, your buddy Dave in the Blind.
How old would you say that clip of Lee Marvin with Johnny Carson was?
Just from clothing alone, it was mid to late 70s. And
yeah, I wonder what movie he was, and Johnny,
he was pitching. It's in the clip. You'll find it, but it was something something and the something something. And I at the time I looked at Agnes and said, you know, we really need to read because.
Are we back to Wheel of Fortune?
No. The Horn ad hoc research department's on it even as I speak. Oliver Reed was his co-star.
Oh, he was great. I loved Oliver Reed. And
Johnny said, How was it working with Oliver Reed? And he said, oh, it was great. We got on famously when we could find him.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it, but something popped into my head, and of course, and I immediately said it to Agnes. If you in terms of just pure film villainy, I think the two meanest people. Oh, and Fabio says the original Fanta was German and not Italian, so now we have a fight. In terms of just pure on-screen villainy, the two meanest characters are Jack Palance's character in Shane. Pick up the gun.
Yeah, yeah.
But pound for pound and mean for mean, the meanest on-screen character, to my mind, is Liberty Valance.
Well, you know, I thought you were going to say, because Lee Marvin was also in a Spencer Tracy film called Bad Day at Black Rock.
Yes, yes, he was.
Remember that?
I love that film. That's one of my favorite films.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But no, Liberty Valance, and I turned to Agnes and I said, you know, one look from Liberty Valance would make Darth Vader wet himself.
Yeah. I'll have to revisit that film. I remember seeing that at the theater when it was in first run in my little neighborhood cinema. And there was even a song. Who sang that song? Was it Gene Pitney or no? There was a top 40 song. It wasn't in the film, but it was a song kind of spun off from the film. Or maybe it was in the film. God, it's been so many years since I've seen it. What was that? 1962?
Oh, and we've got a great idea coming in from Ron in Raleigh, Scott.
Okay.
Since the Duda won in Poland this weekend, and Orban is in power in Hungary, and of course Vlad is in power in Russia until he dies, maybe even longer. That's a cowbell.
Yeah.
You know, when he finally does go to his long home, we'll have to find somebody to reprise Chevy Chase's role in introducing every bit with Vladimir Putin is still dead. Generalissimo Francisco Franco is still dead. Ron in Raleigh says, can we pack up all the maggots here and get them visas and send them someplace without people of color? The aforementioned countries would be good. As far as Nazis are concerned, not all white people are Nazis, but all Nazis are white people. And they're not racists either. They're not racists either. Yeah. Yeah, that was quality work, Ron.
Wait.
Back to racing. No, this community drives this program and the content thereof. And Andy the Angry Jew just said, Nashua, the racing show is probably for Saratoga, New York, which is a big draw from that area. So that's a possibility, too. Wow, NASCAR and the ponies? What more could you ask in an afternoon racing program?
I'd like to see a pony driving a NASCAR. That's entertainment.
Hey, how about NASCAR drivers on those little, what are they called, chutneys, the syrups, you know, the jitneys.
The harness racing.
Harness racing, yeah. Wouldn't you like to see a NASCAR driver racing that?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, and by the way, I knew it. I knew Ralphs was on it. Ralphs will not let a question go. Thank you, Ralphs, the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. The great I told you it was the something-something and the something-something else.
Okay.
The Great Scout and Cat House Thursday.
Don't know it.
Well, now you got to go out and watch it.
It must have come and gone.
It wasn't big. And Ron and Raleigh found it, too. The Great Scout, the something-something and the something-something else. Yes, The Great Scout and Cat House Thursday. And when he mentioned it, Lee Marvin said, "It's not like it's going to fit on a marquee or anything."
What was that film? It was probably among the last films that he ever did. I think in the very early, well, mid '80s. When did he die? Because he was in a film where it was like an anti-terrorist, militaristic sort of thing, and I remember paratroopers jumping out of planes. And my first wife, back when we were first dating, we would go to movies a lot, and we would always argue about which movie in the movie listings would be the better one to go to. And I forget what else was playing, but we ended up, this would have been about 84, 85, we ended up going to this movie with Lee Marvin. And for years, well, for as long as we were married, which was right at 10 years, every time she wanted to win an argument, she would give the title of this fucking Lee Marvin movie that neither of us liked, but she hated it more than I could possibly generate the hate for this film, okay? And, oh, God, I can't remember the name of the film, and I'm too lazy to look it up. So I'll look up both of those.
Okay, sounds good.
What is the name of the one that he was plugging?
It's the something something and the something something else.
Ask for it by name. I certainly will.
The Great Scout and Cat House Thursday.
Okay. Obviously a Western. Was it? I don't know.
Yes. Well, it takes place in 1908 at that moment of transition between old and new West. So there's like rickety little cars and horses still.
Well, what was that one with William Holden and Ernest Borgnine down below the Mexican border? Great film. The Wild Ones, the Bad Ones.
The Wild Bunch.
Was it The Wild Bunch? Yes, The Wild Bunch.
Yeah, I met Ernest Borgnine once.
Did you? Well, that's right. I saw your little quiz on Facebook the other day. I'm still compiling my list. I don't know. Maybe I'm living right. Nobody is really ever an asshole to me in terms of famous people I've met. The closest one.
Mine was a dead. That was a dead giveaway for mine. I mean, how do you look at that list and not say, "Oh, Shelley Moore Capito"?
Yeah, yeah. The closest asshole behavior to me by a famous person that I crossed paths with briefly, and it wasn't really asshole behavior. It was early in the morning. The guy was in a strange town, and he had to go do a meet and greet. I won a ticket to go to a live broadcast of the morning show at Air America, co-hosted by Al Franken and Catherine Lamphere, or something like that. And they were broadcasting from San Diego. And I went out and bought a copy of Al's book so I could have something for him to autograph, which he happily did. But he wasn't really an a-hole. He was just, it was early. He didn't want to be there necessarily. But he was kind of snippy, not real happy.
Oh, Albert says the movie you're thinking of is Delta Force 1986 with Chuck Norris.
Delta Force, yes.
And of course, 1983, and this is a running gag, our buddy Dan Fisher is going to pop by on Thursday. And I think the first conversation we had, some letters had fallen off the marquee at the movie theater in Morgantown in the mall there.
Yeah.
And we were all excited because we thought a foreign film had finally come to Morgantown. You know, little nerdy theater geeks and whatnot. And we were driving by in my big gray pickup truck, and we could, and it was, it said Unco Mon Valor.
Unco Mon Valor.
God, yeah, the M had fallen out from Uncommon Valor. A really terrible, 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 bad, really awful Gene Hackman piece. But for a minute there, hey, maybe it's Fellini. Who knows?
We've got culture. Culture, I tell you.
Culture. Yeah.
Yeah.
Suman says, my vote for best villain goes to the warden in Shawshank Redemption. That guy was chilling.
Oh, God. Who was that?
Well, the research department will get right on it. But here, I think that's the same guy who played in Matewan, the spy shopkeeper.
Yeah, I don't know that film. I know the guy. I can see him in my mind's eye.
C.E. Lively. He was a historic character. He ratted out the miners, and it's the same actor. And he's fantastic. Let's see. Checking through. Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx. Said it definitely wasn't definitely not the Quiet Storm. No, it wasn't. And Kyle says, speaking of right-wing nut jobs, my father's just announced that he's so upset that Orange Asshole could lose in November. He and his wife are going to flee the country if Biden wins because they don't want no Democrats running their country. Their country. So with that in mind, my vote for Biden, if you want to make racists cry and self-deport. Sounds good to me.
Where do they plan to flee to, these people?
Well, you know, Ron and Raleigh just suggested either Hungary, Poland, or Mother Russia.
Well, my vote would go for Russia, because isn't that where the mountains, the word Caucasian comes from, that region?
The Caucasus Mountains.
Yeah. I mean, you don't get much whiter.
Well, remember the League of the South aligned and formed common cause with Mother Russia because they are, in fact, so very, very, very white.
Blindingly white.
Which is kind of odd, because Europe being Europe, there's also a lot of Asiatic features in Russian.
Yeah. My people come from what is now or was or will be again Czechoslovakia, and we have very high cheekbones, which is I don't know where that comes from, but you know, we've been mistaken for, like, my sister especially. She almost looks like she could be on the Land O'Lakes butter a box back when the little Indian maiden
I suspect that has something to do with the incursion of the Mongol tribes under Genghis Khan.
Well, I've always suspected I had little Genghis Khan in me, Bob. That's what that noise is. Occasionally you hear something rattle around. That's my inner Genghis Khan.
Well, here's the interesting thing. More people on planet Earth are related to Genghis Khan than any other human being. Steve in New York says, the king of movie recommendations went to movies while dating? The hell you say. By the way, hi, Scott. That's
hi.
Steve in New York.
Oh, yeah. I used to go to movies almost every week.
Let's see. What else have we got?
And some of them were awfully good, and some of them were awfully bad.
Kevin said the name of the song is... Oh, our buddy Kevin in Colorado Springs. Kevin said the name of the song is something like The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance by Eugene Pitney, or Gene Pitney?
Gene Pitney, okay.
Okay.
The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, he shot Liberty Valance. And I forget the rest.
And of course, it comes with a great, great, great... truism of bad journalism. When the legend is more interesting than the facts, print the legend.
Yeah.
Let's see. We got somebody on the stress line. Let's check that out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, this is George from California.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good. I really enjoy when you and Scott talk movies. Just a programming note, tomorrow morning on TCM, they're going to be showing Bad Day at Black Rock.
Oh, really?
And then sometime this week, they're going to be showing Marty, which is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
But regarding Lee Marvin, don't forget he won the Academy Award for playing a spoof on his Liberty Valance character in Cat Ballou.
Cat Ballou, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
He played a dual role. Two roles.
And you know, I always have loved doing theater. And I've never been a big fan of musical theater, George. But I've always thought that I would dearly love to play Ben Rumson in Paint Your Wagon.
Well, Lee Marvin actually sings. And to beat that, Clint Eastwood
sings. And that's why I think that's the one musical on earth I could do. Because if I can't sing that badly, I
can see you as Ben Rumson, Bob. I can, in my mind's eye.
That's when I think the name Rumson, I think of that movie Dave.
Which one?
It was with Dave, with played Rumson, the Republican running against...
Yeah, Kevin Klein.
Yeah, that was the role, too, for... what's his name? Anyway, I'll let you guys go. I'm enjoying listening. Thanks.
All right, George, you take care now. Bye.
Did we ever find out who the warden in Shawshank Redemption was? I can see him.
We're still waiting. Let me see.
I know his face.
Norton Gunton.
Oh, Bob Gunton.
Bob Gunton.
Yes, God damn. It's this heat, Bob, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. Played C.E. Lively in Mate 1. And he was evil as shit there, too. Because, you know, there's elements of racism in it. And when he calls James Earl Jones boy...
Mm. Well, was that George that was on the stress line?
Yeah.
Thank him for the tip there about Bad Day at Black Rock. That's one of those movies that no matter how many times I've seen it, I'll always watch it again. Just what, you know, for the great performances in it. There's not a false performance in that film.
No. Spencer Trace... And it's a mystery.
Yes, it is. God, who else in it? Spencer Tracy, Anne Francis, I think. Lee Marvin, Ernest Borgnine. The bald-headed meek and mild fellow. He was in... I can't think of his name. He was in that film with... Executive Suite, another great film. Dean Jagger, that's who I'm trying to think of.
Spencer Tracy, Robert Ryan, Anne Francis, Dean Jagger, Walter Brennan, Ernest Borgnine, Lee Marvin. Music by Andre Previn.
Oh God, I forgot all about Walter Brennan and Robert Ryan. God, he was one of the heavies. God damn. Did you know that Walter Brennan had a top 40 hit in the early 60s?
No.
A song about a mule. A mule by the name of Old Rivers. How old was I when I first seen Old Rivers? I can't remember when he weren't around. It's like a talking song. And the flip side, honest to God, to give you an idea of the era that this... The tune came out on. the flip side of Old Rivers, The Epic Ride of John H. Glenn. It was to commemorate the first orbital U.S. manned space flight.
So what, 1961?
62. February of 62. But Old Rivers charted. Got pretty high up. Now, see, that's the difference between pop radio back then and how fragmented radio is now. On a top 40 station back in the 60s, up until a certain point when the music began to change radically, you could have the Beatles and an old Elvis tune and Herman's Hermits.
Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter.
A duet by Frank and Nancy Sinatra, something stupid, all within the same hour of a typical.
There are
40.
Still stations that do that kind of. There's a station over in, I guess it's maybe Buckhannon, West Virginia. You'll get the Stones followed by Marty Robbins. I swear.
Yeah.
And it's eclectic and absolute. It's culturally fascinating. Now we have to turn back to WSMN in Nashua. Being in New Hampshire, David in South Carolina, Stan says they should have a Bob's sledding show. Takes two Bobs to handle all that racing.
Jeez.
The last cast member, John Erickson, Angelo tells us, Pete Wirth, passed away in May of this year at age 93. The last cast member of Bad Day at Black Rock.
Oh, wow.
Jeremy says, don't forget about the cheap knockoff of Shawshank, The Last Castle with Robert Redford, and in his last role before he died playing the warden, James Gandolfini. Yeah, there was one who was taken too early.
Yes, indeed.
As for evil characters, Lee in New York says, remember Judge Doom, Christopher Lloyd, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit? People were laughing. He smiled, and the room froze.
God, I don't. I'll have to revisit. God, I got to make a list of all these films to revisit.
And Ron in Raleigh tells us New Hampshire is population 1.35 million, mostly white people.
New Hampshire.
As to the history of Fanta, Flavio says during the Second World War, the U.S. established a trade embargo against Germany. That's how Poppy Bush, Prescott, Bush got busted under the Trading with the Enemy Act, making the export of Coca-Cola syrup difficult. To circumvent this, Max Keith, the head of Coca-Cola Deutschland, Coca-Cola GmbH, decided to create a new product for the German market using only ingredients available in Germany at the time, including beet sugar, whey, and apple pomace, the leftovers of leftovers, as Keith later recalled. The name was the result of a brainstorming session, which started with Keith's exhorting his team to use their imagination, Fantasy in German, to which one of his salesmen, Joe Nipp, reported, Fanta. And,
I had no idea.
Yeah. And I remember drinking something over there that was just wonderful. It was Apfelsaft, and it was like sparkling water and apple cider or something. Delicious. Wonderful.
Damn.
So, yeah. Hey, thanks very kindly to Joey. Joey jumped in. Thank you for helping us celebrate Darlene's birthday, Joey. Thank you very kindly. Thank you. Let me see here. Thank you to Louie. Thank you, Louie, for jumping in on Darlene's birthday. That's tremendous. Trying to make sure that I get everybody because I had a note from Darlene. Darlene says, "Horn listener, thank you, horn listeners and friends from the birthday girl and a founding mother of the sorority of Leans. Oh, geez, what's up with J.K. Rowling? But I digress and want to think of pleasing things on my 55th, like the kids speaking out against their mother, i.e. Daniel, Emma, Rupert, et al. The kids have asserted their independence. And even Robert Mueller broke and asserted his independence, finally speaking up and showing he's actually, well, human. The Stone commutation was just too much even for him. Can't wait for Andrew Weissman's book on the Russia investigation. Sounds like it's going to be interesting. Weissman says they could have done more and that they made mistakes. Not sure those are helpful admissions to hear right now as we're careening towards disaster. I'm sure in part it's a suspenseful primer for his book, but I'm expecting Weissman to deliver, sad enough as that is. And from the publishing world, news comes this evening that the state of New York has, the court system there, has dropped its injunction against Mary Trump's book because it's due to be published tomorrow.
Yep.
And so I'm guessing that the court said, well, this is a futile act.
Well, the thing that gets
because
me about
it's going to be published, and the thing is, it's already out in pre-publication review copies.
Yeah. I forget what I was watching last night, but there was maybe it was one of the cable news channels. They were talking about the circumstances have conspired to make Trump even crazier than he was before. Remember a few weeks ago in Tulsa, he had that big shindig, and they were saying in the run-up to it, million or more requests for tickets, and they barely broke 6,000 in attendance in this huge arena in Tulsa, and nothing but empty seats, you know, except for the 6,000 who managed to show up. And then, like... he wants to have these rallies because that's where he gets his strength, his energy. He gets pumped up by the crowds, but circumstances are conspiring. It's amazing the power of a virus that's a hoax. Nothing more than a talking point and a hoax could serve to derail Trump's efforts in these critical weeks and months before his most important election of his life. Isn't that interesting how that works out? But he can't get a break. He can't go to New Hampshire. You know, one of the Sununus grew a spine, or what passes for a spine, and said, well, yeah, okay, you can come up, but I'm not going to be there on the platform with you. I think he greeted him at the airport or whatever, but didn't go to the said he wasn't going to come to the rally. And they said it was rained out. But there was no rain that day.
There was no.
Early morning mist, and then it cleared up. It was a lovely day. But the conspiracy is such that the places where Trump needs to go, like Pennsylvania and these states have Democratic governors who won't lift the health regulations to allow for a convocation of that size. So he's... No matter which way he turns, he's getting screwed. You know, he wants to have these rallies because they pump him up like Hans and Franz, you know, on the old Saturday Night Bet. But the poor bastard can't catch a break, and I'm glad. I'm glad. It's like I sent you in that email when you were talking about he's moaning about the online-only school program for San Diego and Los Angeles this fall. And I said, good, let him rant, let him rave, let him foam at the mouth. Let him do the Curly Howard circular floor movement for an hour and a half in the center of the Oval Office. You know, stoke the fucking stroke.
Right. Oh, and let's pop back over to the stress line a minute. We got somebody there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Okay.
Good evening. How are you guys doing? This is Kurt up here in the Hinterhunt heartland up here in North Dakota up here.
Hey, Kurt.
North Dakota Stan, I should say.
Yes, indeed. And you got a little bit more Stan because when it comes to screwing up a pandemic, I don't know if you saw this or not, Kurt, but I was hooting like a barn owl earlier. Way, way, way back in the hair band 80s, there was a rock and roll band called Great White.
Right.
Well,
yes.
They just played North Dakota. There were no face masks. There was no social distancing, and it was part of an outdoor summer concert series. And the crowd was belly button to butthole, and they were LARPing and smollicking and grabulating all over each other. They said, we're not in a position to enforce the laws. We're just here to play the music. We've had the luxury of hindsight, and we would like to apologize to those who disagree with our decision to fulfill our contractual agreement. In other words, they needed the money.
Right. Yes, that's right. And I think there's a lot of bands that are like that. I think I'm probably, probably pissed away a lot of their money, too, that they made when they were big.
Trying to come up with an excuse, the event coordinator, April Getz, told the Dickinson Press, "We do not have any restrictions, we don't have any. I guess it's one of the first events this year that didn't get canceled and was approved by the city. We're all very, very excited about it. It's one of those things where if people feel comfortable coming down and mixing and mingling, that's their personal choice. We're leaving it up to everybody that chooses to attend."
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, well, you should just hear the dumb fuckery up here. I mean, our local radio, you would think there's no pandemic at all going on, Bob. I get a kick out of some of these announcers up here that'll say, well, we're in the post-pandemic era now, as if the fucker's over, I don't understand these people. And yet now the rates are going up here now, too. I think here in Grand Forks County now, I think we had, I think we're up to about, I think we went up about 100 and some more cases here now. I mean, it's just nuts. And we got the bars open here. See, I actually live right downtown. And you got people LARPing and smollicking and, grouping all together here. And, of course, it's a lot of the younger people, and I live right downtown, right where the bar sections are, and it's nuts. I mean, there is no, there's no mask, no social distancing at all.
Kurt, on the COVIDActNow.org map, you have officially turned gold.
Right?
You're at risk. Montana, immediately to your west, has turned red. The number of red states, in an outbreak status has expanded. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And guess what? West Virginia is one of them. Montana, Arizona, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and West Virginia.
Oh, geez.
Kurt and Bob, do you remember what happened on May 28th?
May 28th?
Memorial Day weekend?
May 28th was the day that the odometer of death clicked over to 100,000 COVID deaths.
Right.
Right after that happened, or on that day, on this program, I said that number would double, and I said it would double by July 28th. Do you remember that, Bob?
I do.
And even as I was saying that, we got to remember the context. The odometer of death had just kicked over to 100,000 in the space of what would have been from the start of the year, February, January, when the first case was diagnosed, to March, to April, to May, to the end of May. It took us that long to get 100,000. And I, peering into my crystal crockpot, said, well, that number will double, and it will double by July 28th. And even as I was saying it, I had no earthly idea how right I would be. I don't know. And I take no pleasure in the fact that in 13, what, 18 days time, whatever it is, 12 days time, we could very well hit that goddamn number and surpass it.
Well, right now we're at 135,582.
That's right.
So it's still within the realm of possibility at the rate we're going. God,
some are even saying that by September, or was it later on, like October, or is it November? They figure, you know, it's going to be, you know, like around 180,000 by the, you know, by almost the year's end. And then some are even
now
saying,
Kurt, 200,000. Kurt, what the study says is going as we are going now, it would be way north of 200,000, but that we could keep it down to 162,000 if we would lock down again.
Right. Yes. Well, I think it should be mandatory to wear masks. I think it should be a national thing. I mean, unfortunately, guys, we have no leadership in this country. There's just nothing. It's just laughable.
You'll get no argument from me, Kurt, because, you know,
they
couldn't have planned this better. Well, if they had sat down and slide rules and sharp pencils, they couldn't have planned this any better.
No. Right. No, that's right. It's just amazing, what the hell is going on.
It's going to get ever so much worse, guys.
I've got relatives up in Canada. Oh, yes. In Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to point out two things. One, down in San Antonio, Dr. Jane Appleby, she's the chief medical officer for Methodist Hospital and Methodist Children's Hospital, said that one of her patients, a 30-year-old man, had recently died. He had attended a COVID party. She said he thought he was young, and he was invincible and wouldn't get affected. One of the things that was heart-wrenching that he said to his nurse was, "I think I made a mistake." And then he died. Meanwhile, coming from the New York Times today, 5.4 million Americans have lost their health insurance as a result of the Trump pandemic. A state-by-state examination of the effects of the pandemic on laid-off adults younger than 65. Nearly half, 46%, of the coverage losses from the pandemic came from California, Texas, Florida, New York, and North Carolina. And if we never again hear one of these millionaires on the TV talk about how people love their employer-provided health care, it'll be too soon. And if one of them does, they should immediately be hit with a pie in the face. If not a fist.
Yeah, right.
Well, this could end up being the best thing to happen to changes in our health system. I mean, but whoever's in charge at that point has got to be smart enough and has got to have the leadership skills and has got to have the House and the Senate and a good popular voice of the consent and the agreement of the people to say, look, this is what happens when you have a thrown-together type of healthcare system and people lose their jobs and their insurance is hooked to that employment. This is Exhibit A. This is what happens. So let's go about ensuring, hopefully, that we not repeat this type of mistake again. Yes, there may be pandemics in the future, but let us hope that this will serve to be instructive and that we can actually behave in a manner consistent with applying what we've learned to make it better, to make a better net should we have to go that way again. And unfortunately, if we get four more years of Trump, we may have no future at all.
No,
game over.
No,
we're circling the drain right now. And if he stays in office, well, we're around the bowl and down the hole. Hey guys, I got to get out of here. We're over time. Yeah. But it's been a great conversation.
Oh, okay.
Thank you both. Thanks, Kurt, for chiming in, and thank you, Scott.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bob.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll call back some other time. But I wanted to bring up some of this TV trivia that you guys were talking about there. But I'll bring that up some other time.
All right, sounds great, Kurt.
That was really, really interesting.
Listen, you stay safe, please.
I love old movies and TV shows and everything. So yes. You too. You too, you guys, and you too, Scott, and everybody at the Horn family. And we'll talk again sometime.
Okay, Kurt.
All right, sounds good, Kurt. See you, Scott.
And see you, Bob. And happy birthday to Darlene.
Indeed, happy birthday to Darlene. And so we come to the end of the program. Information dense as it was. And all I can do is, you know, now that West Virginia has turned red, because we have a Republican state government, I assure you that I am doing everything in my power to stay safe. Agnes is doing everything in her power to stay safe. And we're trying to get Ferg to do the same thing. For reasons of, it's just difficult. But I'm going to try to stay safe, and I want this program to go on and on and on and on. And it's frightening. It is, in fact, frightening. My little county has 82 total cases, 25 active, 4 fatal. And we are just not very good at all at doing our masks and gloves and hand washing. And because it's summer. And we got to go to the lake. We got to be drinking. Jesus. But thanks to everybody for jumping in and celebrating Darlene's 55th birthday with her. Happy birthday, Darlene. Make the most of the rest of it. And by all means, those clams just sound delicious. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you to our all volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. West Virginia's infection rate, the R number, continues to climb. We are now number one in the nation at 1.42. More people are getting infected in West Virginia per capita than even in Florida or Texas. And, of course, there's no meaningful data on my county, much at all, on the COVID Act Now website. The contact tracing here is pathetic. The only thing we can say that's good right now is that we've only used 4% of our ICU headroom. But that can change rapidly as they're learning to their own tragic horror in places like Florida and Arizona and Texas. So please, if it's at all humanly possible for you, stay home. If it's at all humanly possible for you, stay home. If you have to go out, take every precaution. If something inside you says, maybe I'm being too careful, tell whoever that is inside you to shut the fuck up, because in the middle of a pandemic, there is no such thing as too careful. Hell, I sanitize my gloves before I take them off. We care for our masks as though they were made of pure gold, because they're so damn hard to come by. Keep your social distance. We're doing the same. And if by some chance you see someone coming towards you without a mask, assume they're a maggot and avoid them like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.